It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me now, Mike Fouché. He joins us every week. He's from AlderTract, a subscription news site that covers all things Chicago politics. Lots to talk about today, including the obvious story, the Denny Hastert sentencing at the Dirksen Federal Building. But also, we're going to continue the conversation we've been having about the is there going to be a strike before the end of the school year?
Right.
We'll talk at Lucas Museum. We'll also talk about a new police shooting video that was released by CPD last Friday. Lots to talk about. Mike, good to see you.
It's great to be here.
All right, so let's start with Hastert. I mean, you know, from our angle, we're not going to rehash every part of this case.
No.
I mean, you can get that anywhere.
Amazingly grotesque story.
Yeah. I mean, it's and the stuff that came out today. But politically, this was kind of like a bombshell.
You could not. I mean, I think if somebody wrote this and put it into, you know, West Wing or The Good Wife or something like that, people are like, ah, that's so crazy. That could never happen. But, you know, Denny Hastert. Turns out that he was coach for former House Minority Leader, Republican House Minority Leader, Tom Cross's brother, and that Tom Cross's brother was one of the victims. And that Denny Hastert actually asked Tom Cross to write him a letter in support.
This was just happened last week or the last couple of weeks where he said, you know, he had asked a bunch of politicians to write letters
right.
of support.
Right.
And they did.
And they did.
DeLay,
and some of them,
others,
were, some of them were pretty gross. I mean, you know, Tom DeLay, the former
we all make mistakes or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
We all make mistakes. No biggie, right?
But the idea that Denny Hastert would ask Tom Cross, it's
like
hard,
he's completely blind to it. You know, that it's like he has no whatever. You can't know the mind of another person. And then the other thing is that the current Illinois House Minority Leader, Jim Durkin, his brother is Denny, the judge in Denny Hastert's case. Now, the Durkins are actually the three Durkin brothers are actually very successful. The third Durkin brother is a trial lawyer who is actually an expert on airplane crash law.
Okay.
And so, you know, those three guys, they do a lot of stuff,
okay,
you know?
Right,
yeah, they
do
all right.
Right.
Hey, the Durkin brothers, they did all right. But, you know, I mean, the fact that all of this Illinois GOP stuff is all swirling around and it's all hitting Denny Hastert at the same time as this is all happening is kind of mind blowing.
Does it? I mean, it doesn't really impact the Durkins or the Cross. I mean, the Crosses, that's a tremendous story. I mean, it was said that, you know, Scott Cross came forward because he had asked his brother, Hastert had asked his brother, saying, you know, this can't stand. Now, he was going to be quiet about it.
And I'm forgetting the name of the guy, the sidekick for Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, Andy Richter.
Andy
right?
Richter. He said, too, that he wasn't molested, but he had seen the couch that Hastert had, or not the couch, the lazy boy chair he had positioned in front of the boys' locker room. So, you know, I guess this stuff never goes away, right?
Mike,
you try to hide it.
Yeah, exactly. Dennis Hastert, you know, there's been a lot of stories because this has been in the news for a year now. But, I mean, he was a big politician from Illinois, a very successful one, rose to ranks to U.S.
Short of Joe Cannon. Joe Cannon in the early 1900s was the Speaker of the House from Illinois, one of the most powerful ever. And Denny Hastert was trying to follow in those shoes. You know, that's a big story. And then he turns out to be this person who had been covering up a whole series of sexual molestation crimes.
And not to mention at the helm of some of the sexual scandals that were coming out of the House at that time. I mean, Congressman Foley, others who, you know, were under that the leadership in the House was questioned. Saying, why didn't you do anything?
Right.
And now you have a little better
now
understanding.
Now maybe you know.
You know, our texters have texted in. Rob kind of made the joke about Rob Blagojevich. But, you know, people are asking for a crime like Rob Blagojevich was a political crime to get 14 years in prison, federal prison, and then to turn around and have people on the stand to actually have admission in this case. Denny Hastert admitting, saying the word yes.
Yes,
when
I did
asked,
it.
Yes,
I
did
responsibility.
It. And I take responsibility and getting 15 months.
Right.
You can understand why people are confused.
You know, the judge in the case, actually, before he read the sentence in Denny Hastert's case, spent a lot of time talking about all of the different medical facilities that federal prison will have and that there are lots and lots of people over the age of 65 in federal prison. And so he was trying to make it clear that Denny Hastert is not the only guy. Just because he's old doesn't mean he doesn't get to go to jail for a long time.
The defense was trying to say he's old. Let's commute the sentence or let's suspend the sentence because he's old.
Right. And I think that he was trying to make that case. And then I think it's also important to point out that this, you can't necessarily compare different cases against one another. You know, it's apples to oranges.
Yeah, right.
And but I think there's also an argument. It's not necessarily just that the Danny Hastert sentencing wasn't long enough. It's also that maybe the Rod Blagojevich sentencing was too long. You know, how long did he get it? Did he get a dozen years?
Yeah, I think he had 14 years.
14 years. You know, I mean, that's so.
And they won't change it.
And they won't change it.
They just had this over the winter time of appeals, and they're like, no.
Right. So, you know, I think every judge has a great deal of flexibility in sentencing. And
but isn't this more about the classification of the crime? I mean,
yeah.
Essentially, this is an obstruction of justice or a hush money case, or I don't know what you call a bank fraud, is
yeah.
what you're getting on. Not
right.
sexual molestation.
Not
that's
the actual
different,
sexual molestation.
If that was the crime, and that's what they that then you could I think you could
I think
a book
you probably
it,
would have gotten a lot more years.
So 15 months. This is very interesting. 773 texter just texting, as a proponent of the legalization of consensual crimes, i.e., drugs and prostitution, I find it sweetly ironic that the banking law Hastert broke was enacted by his fellow Republicans as a weapon in the war on drugs.
Yeah.
That's interesting that's yeah. the law that was used to take
you know,
down Danny Hastert.
We've got there's no question that sentencing in the United States is backwards in a lot of ways. And it's been a while. I think the last time that sentencing really got a hard look was in 1995 with the crime bill.
Well, last question on this, and we'll move on to some other stuff. But I mean, I kind of set it up earlier. It's, you know, Danny Hastert follows in a long line of political figures who have gone to jail in
yeah,
the state of Illinois.
Top Illinois figures.
Google News had this at the top. I mean, it just does not bode well, regardless of the crime. I mean, this crime is much more serious than, say, you know, political favors.
Right.
But it doesn't bode well for Illinois politics once again.
No, it doesn't. And it certainly gives us a black eye. And I think it's important to point out that neither party is really immune from this. You know, Democrats and Republicans both have a lot of problems. And I think, you know, as a Illinoisan, I don't know, whatever we call ourselves, Illini, it's easy to be cynical. And it's easy for us to say, boy, we're terrible. You know, well, they're all crooks. You know, politicians are terrible. I'm not going to vote, blah, 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 blah. But I personally think that, you know, we should all rise to the challenge and see what we can do in order to stop this sort of thing from continuing.
Mike Fouché is with AlderTrack.com, subscription news site that covers all things Chicago politics. We come back. We have to talk. We have to talk about CTU.
More great news?
and potential strike before the end of the year.
Yeah, right.
Let's talk the quagmire that is the Lucas Museum. And this police shooting, which I came back from vacation. I saw the story
yeah.
that they had released a police shooting, which I just saw.
In the dead of night on Friday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, and I saw the tail end of it, and I was like, I'm not even sure what I'm watching. This was not sort of the what we saw with Laquan McDonald. But we'll talk about it coming up here after the break. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Mike Fouché is with me from AlderTrack. We're talking about the week in Chicago politics. Let's transition to the police video
right.
that was released in the dead of night
right.
on Friday night.
Right.
This is really the first move by the new Chicago Police Department superintendent saying, you know, we're going to reopen and take a look at this case from
right.
2011.
Right. So Superintendent Eddie Johnson, what he did is that he released on Friday, really at about 6 o'clock p.m. on Friday, the perfect time for everyone to ignore the video. And actually, AlderTrack had reported that there was a video 3 days before and that there was a video coming out. And the police and the mayor's office did not respond to our questions for 3 days, asking, does the video exist? Can you tell us about it? And so then they finally released it on late Friday night. So it was too late, really, for the evening news. And it would have to go into the Saturday papers, which nobody reads. What happened was is that a woman named Tiffany Jacobs and her boyfriend robbed a McDonald's with a gun. And the boyfriend actually is the one who did the robbing. She was the driver. She claims in her statement that he made her do it and she was afraid of the gun.
Yeah.
Then police saw them in the car and they were driving along. He jumped out of the car. And then she started to pull into a Citgo gas station and started to slow down at the station. And police thought that maybe she was slowing down the car to stop, and one police officer got out in order to approach the car. She then sped up. The police officer, thinking that he was trying to run her over, she claimed she was just trying to get out of his way. And then the police officer fired 5 shots through the windshield, actually hitting her in the chest. And so then she continued on for another block or so. And it's kind of, I mean, kind of amazing.
That's what I saw. I saw after this.
She continues on,
the news, right?
And then you can see the dash cam before. It's very hazy on some security cams at the gas station. But then a police dash cam video shows her, the car going along, and then
she
her stopping.
Out, yeah.
She gets out of the car. She doesn't lift her hands up, but her hands are clearly at rest. And a police officer comes over, grabs her, and it's not clear if it's by the hair or by the back of her jacket.
Takes her down.
Slams her to the ground, and then 2 police officers tase her and while she's on the ground, and then they handcuff her. The superintendent, what he has done is that he said the 2 officers that brought her to the ground and then tased her, he has stripped them of police powers and then investigating them whether or not the procedure was correct. He found it, quote, concerning their process.
Almost excessive force because one of their own was in harm's way or what they thought. And I don't know what they were thinking, but the idea that this was a police chase and at the end, they never turn out where they're like, excuse me, would you like to put your hands behind your back? I mean, the police are going to be like, you ran from us after there were shots fired.
Right.
It's hard to, in these cases, are we going to see more of these kind of, you know, like the gray area kind of police videos?
So there's a few things here. First off, this happened in 2011. Tiffany Jacobs already went to jail. She's actually serving 12 years for armed robbery, and she pled guilty. So the question is, why did it take so long for this video to come out? And, okay, great, Superintendent Johnson is releasing these sort of things, but whatever sort of things are there. AlderTrack had heard about the video, and we had been reporting that the video existed, and still the mayor's office and the police department took 3 days in order to admit it. They wouldn't confirm or deny that the video existed for 3 days. And we understand that there are numerous other videos that are out there that are still to be released. We don't have all the details on it. We hear rumors, so we can't confirm or deny it. I think we expect that there is going to be a trickle of other stuff that's going to be coming out. And unfortunately, it's happening very slowly. Now, to put it in contrast, the Cook County Sheriff's Department, a few weeks ago, they announced a program. They're just dumping everything. They're just going to release everything.
Yeah, right.
Everything's coming out.
Of a data dump kind of style.
Yeah, and so they don't want to have anybody that's going to be on them about whether or not they're releasing what their transparency is. So, you know, it's still very slow.
Well, one of the reasons, I mean, this case may not have, you know, caught fire almost like the Laquan McDonald video did, is because there is a gray area. Because what you see on video isn't necessarily, and she did plead guilty for an armed robbery.
Right.
She did run from the police after shots were fired. I'm not trying to say that it wasn't excessive force or whatever,
She was certainly a player in this, and she was not an innocent. And there's no question about that. And so the issue, the way that I see it, is that it's less about whether or not the police use excessive force and more about, look, you know, if this happened, why didn't you guys just put out the video and be upfront about it? Why did it take 5 years? And then once we heard about it, why did you have to take 3 days in order to say anything about it? And then why did you release it in the dead of night?
That doesn't seem like the transparency that was promised. But we'll find out if that continues, because it almost feels like a little bit of pressure. People knew it was out there and, okay, we better put this out or we're going to be in violation of what we said we wouldn't do.
Exactly.
Right? All right, let's talk about CTU and CPS.
Yeah.
CTU, I mean,
the soap opera
you've been talking about this for a while, the idea that they're really not in a position to strike before the end of the year, that we're really looking at maybe beginning of next year. Does that still hold up? Because I know I know that CTU has sensitivities when it comes to the end of the school year because they don't want to mess kids up who are graduating.
Right. They don't want to screw up people's graduation. And there's also a lot of kids with potential sports scholarships for college that need to do some end of the year programs that are part of being in school. And that's important. And so I don't think the teachers want to carry that burden, at least the teachers that I've spoken to. And I think that that's probably the case for everybody. So I think that my personal analysis is that I think that we're not going to see a strike until the fall. That might change. Now, CTU, I think, is meeting tomorrow. Their House of Delegates, which is about a 400 and some odd group, actually 600 and some odd group of teachers that make policy decisions. They'll make some sort of decision tomorrow. I don't think it's going to be that let's strike as soon as possible, but they can strike as soon as I think it's May 15th.
Where are we at, Mike? I haven't really paid attention to where we're at with CPS funding. I mean, are they still on track to run out of money before?
Imagine a garbage fire. Can you think of a garbage fire? That's pretty much the situation for CPS.
Very visual, yeah.
I mean, they're in huge trouble. They've borrowed well over $1 billion of short-term debt. That means going to the bank, not going to bondholders. It means it's very high interest rates. They haven't revealed what those interest rates are, but we can be pretty sure that they're probably double digits.
CTU like thinks they know because they're out in front of protesting in front of Bank of America all the time about this stuff.
Right. And so, you know, it's probably double digits. It's very expensive borrowing. They have the capability to borrow probably another $1 billion if they really had to. And so then there's this whole issue of where Rahner is now suggesting that the school funding formula be changed where even less money goes to CPS. So we're talking about the situation getting worse and worse and worse and worse, not better. There is so far no light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay, real quick, last issue, Lucas Museum. We haven't talked about this. I've talked with Lee Bay a couple times on the show about it. I don't know what's happening here. So the latest proposal,
the Jabba Palace,
is the idea of taking the old McCormick place, tearing it down and putting it there.
No, they're not going to tear it down. They're just going to scrape off the top part and they're going to leave the parking lot there, or the garage and all the other storage space on the bottom. All the stuff that's, you know, made out of concrete. They're going to keep all the metal. They just scrape it right off. It's like taking the top part off of a cake frosting, you know. And then they'll build the Jabba Palace on top. The problem is there's a couple of big problems. The first is it's going to cost a lot of money to do. And Lucas says he'll chip in 700 and some odd billion or million dollars in order to make it work. But that still means the city has to borrow, not really the city, but McPeer has to borrow like another billion. And they'd have to get approval from the state to do it. But wait, there's more. If they get rid of this place, that means that they're going to lose revenue. McPeer is going to lose revenue that they're getting for conferences.
For parking and things like that.
Well, no, they have shows.
They do. They still have shows.
They have big shows that are there. And so that they would build another facility, but it would take 2 or 3 years in order to do that. So that would be lost revenue. Plus, the Park District owns the land that place is on, and they get paid rent. If the Lucas Museum goes there, that means no more rent going to the Park District. So there's a lot of money issues.
We need to do like a 3-hour show on this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You want to
really do?
You know, I think that would be the end of the Download show. It would be over.
Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com, subscription news site that covers all things Chicago politics. He joins us weekly here
Great to
on
be
the
here.
Download. Thanks for being here, Mike.
Yeah, no problem.